got to turn my mic on.
It is the Garden Hotline.
On a Saturday morning, we have double trouble today.
Oops.
Double experts. Chuck Caverly, botanist, certified arborist, and a Grow Native certified professional, 35 years of experience. And Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor, a technician for a St. Louis family-owned company. They're both here. How did you guys end up both being here at the same time?
We've known each other for, I'm going to say 20-plus years.
Oh, probably 35 years.
Okay. Well, you're not even getting old.
I've been married now. 35 years, and I met him before I met my wife. So
wow.
So we went to school at Truman, and I think we talked about this last time. We're Truman botany graduates, and so we just decided we'd want to do it together because we love each other.
Yeah. I usually use Steve's name in vain because I recognize him as finishing first in the class. I finished second, so I either finished second or last in my class when I graduated. So
he's lying.
It's all Steve's fault.
All right. Well, we're going to get your input on lots of garden questions this morning. The hotline number is 314-436-7900. We also have an 800 number. You have to dial 1 first. 1-800-925-1120. 1-800-925-1120. So if you have a question about pests, plants, trees, anything gardening, fire away. We are ready to take your questions. Now, Steve, you were telling me that we have breaking news to start the show.
Scott, I'm so excited. We're going to break news here on KMOX. We've got, if you check out the app Cicada Safari, you can get a whole map of the whole U.S. and people take pictures of cicadas emerging. So far, there are three cities. One is Macon, Georgia. Mm-hmm. The other one is Williamsburg, Virginia. And the third one, most importantly, is St. Louis.
Wow.
And you will not believe where one of the first photos was taken of the cicadas in St. Louis.
You have no idea. Tell us, Steve.
It's Powder Valley Conservation Department. And that's like the third time now they've been on our show.
Yeah, so. I know. Powder Valley is getting a lot of attention on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, it's three. It's the magic number. So we're excited. Cicadas are out and about. They're great for our soil. They sip on the sap of tree roots for 13 years. They're about an inch long adults. They're in sync right now. Right now they're crawling out of the ground, and they had this month-long orgy. And then they lay eggs, and then they die. So let's give them a break. They get out, they die, and then they're forgotten. But then, you know what we're left with? We're left over with something that smells like Limburger cheese.
Yeah, it's very nice, very extra. I'm looking forward to my dogs consuming them.
Yeah,
either as they're alive or as they pass and fall on the ground. You know, my dogs will be all over that.
No, you know, we just got to live with it. The songs are going to be beautiful, too. You're going to enjoy that. It's your mindset.
Is that what you call them, songs?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty song, yeah. That's why we had Marvin Gaye on there. It's like, get it on. Oh,
that's what that was for. I was wondering.
So they're in the ground for 17 or 13 years.
Yeah.
They get to the top, and then they've got a month to basically grow, sing, get it on, and then die. So let's give them a break, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I like your mindset there, Steve. It's a positive one. Let's not complain about the noise,
right?
Even though after a couple of weeks, it's going to be like, stop.
It's nature's white noise version of white noise. It's just white noise. That's all it is. It's just background white noise.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
I mean, it's been a while since it's been a long time since we've had these two different varieties come out at the same time, since 1803, I think. So it's going to be something, you know, historic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that was the time Thomas Jefferson and also Lewis and Clark started their journey west. So it's going to be good. And later on in the show, we're going to have a chocolate covered cicada recipe, if you're interested in that. So stay tuned for that.
Wait, what?
Yeah, we're going to give out a recipe for chocolate-covered cicadas.
Obnoxious and delicious. What more could you think of?
Chuck, have you ever eaten an insect before?
No, not on purpose. Anyway.
Chocolate-covered cicadas. Well, again, we're taking advantage of the fact that they're here.
Yeah. I wonder if Bissinger's is going to be doing those this year.
Yeah. Have you ever had, I assume you've had a chocolate-covered insect?
No.
No?
Not yet.
But you have a recipe?
Yeah, I have a recipe, yeah. And last time it happened, like 7 years ago, some chocolatier on the East Coast, she was selling them for $22 a dozen. So I imagine now it's probably like $50 a dozen for chocolate-covered cicadas.
Is it milk chocolate or sea salt caramel chocolate?
I prefer dark chocolate with my cicadas.
Yes. And cheese, perhaps. I don't know. Whatever it takes.
Some Chianti, too.
Yeah, and some fava beans. Yeah. Okay, we are off to a great start so far on the Garden Hotline. I believe we have a caller. Go ahead, you're on.
Go ahead, Greg.
Hello.
Yep, you're on KMOX.
Okay. I was just wondering if it's too early to put my tomatoes, bell peppers, and sweet banana peppers in today.
That's a great question. I just had that question last night for my wife, and because we have a bunch of stuff in the greenhouse that she's been growing her babies ready to go in the ground. And so I would tell you our typical last frost date is April 15th. Which is Monday, as we all know. And if you looked at the weather forecast looks really good for the next couple of days, certainly. Although I did notice the long-range forecast is putting us down maybe as low as 38 next weekend for a low. So, you know, it would be one thing to think about it. I would say if you can protect them or if you have a way to protect them, I would go ahead and put them in the ground because I'm telling my wife to put ours in the ground this weekend. So I would go ahead with it. Get them growing and get them going.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for calling.
So the heat that is happening right now, today, tomorrow, the next day, I mean, these temperatures are abnormal for mid-April, upper 80s. Mm-hmm. Anything people need to be concerned about there or is – they're nothing that will happen.
So I would argue from a native standpoint, you know, it's our typical atypical St. Louis, right? Just mm-hmm. because it says our high is supposed to be 67 or 76 and it's going to be 86. That's just classic for us, right? It never seems to be the same. Having said that, a lot of the horticultural hybrids and cultivars that are out there are already flowering. They're already moving through their cycle. So those are the plants because they pop early. They're not used to it like the natives are. They could get burned. But is there something that you can do now to protect your, you know, your magnolias or your, you know, whatever else might be popping? I would say no. I say, you know, we're into it now. If we get a cold snap, you get it set back a little bit. But at this point, everything's pushing. You know, my hostas in my yard are up everywhere. I got a juga blooming. The crab apples are blooming. My silver bells are blooming. The bluebells are blooming. I mean, everything is coming on. So at this point, we're in for the ride. We're locked in, and I think we're ready to go.
Yeah, I concur with Chuck. I think things are going ahead of schedule. Just look at the cicada. They're not supposed to be up until May. So now here it is, you know, not even April 15th yet, and they're starting to emerge. And we did, you remember, we had a really warm winter. It really was extraordinary. And the water was low. We went through a drought there for a long time, and now it's out of it. So I think we're going to get an early season. So we're getting ready to get going. Get it going now.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've got the show going already. It's up and running, and we're going to take your questions at 314-436-7900 with Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. Stay tuned. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Back on the Garden Hotline, KMOX Saturday morning. I'm Scott Jagow, your host. Our experts are Chuck Caverly, a botanist, certified arborist, and grow native professional, 35 years of experience. Steve Millett is a plant and pest doctor. They went to school together at Truman a long time ago, I think.
Last century.
Know each other for a long time, both experts in the field of gardening and trees and plants and pests. So, your questions this morning at 314-436-7900. Let's go to the phones. Roseanne, you are on Garden Hotline.
Hello.
Hi, Roseanne. Where are you calling from?
St. Louis City.
St. Louis City. What neighborhood?
Southampton.
Southampton. Soho. Good. I love that place. You go to the Garden Center on Southampton?
I sure do.
What do you think of it?
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have a lot of things there, and sometimes I just walk through the garden center and pretend it's my garden, and that sort of takes care of it, like therapy.
Yeah, no, I understand. What's your question today?
About 20 years ago, I bought this maybe 15-inch in diameter plastic, like the Black Garden plastic, and it had around like a clock where the numbers are, different bulbs, and there were tomato tulips and these little baby hyacinths and whatever the other ones were, they died off. Mm-hmm. Well, the tulips, every year they'd come up and maybe there'd be one flower, two flowers, and they were red and white and a real dark purple, almost black. Well, this year, like, each clump came up huge, and there were maybe 8 to 10 flowers in each clump. And then the little baby hyacinths also came up in great numbers. So I don't know what happened under that ground, but something happened. Now what I want to do is, like, move them so that they look organized, because before there weren't enough to look organized.
Yeah, you can divide those and then move them out. I'd probably wait till they'd done flowering.
Yeah, I would wait until all of the energy is back in the bulb. So the way that the plant's going to tell you that is all those leaves, either on the hyacinths or the tulips, as they begin to turn yellow from the tips back, they're taking all that energy and rebuilding their bulbs. What you're telling us is last year was a really good year for that because you've got so many more flowers this year. So if you try to repeat that success, keep that planter watered, keep the all of that energy going back into those bulbs, let them dry down, you know, and then once they've dried down, then dig them up, split them, and reorganize them the way that you want them.
Okay, now the rest of the question is that garden badly needs to be weeded. And I'm concerned the little baby hyacinths, I mean, they don't get any taller than like 6 inches, but oh my, are they fragrant. And how will I know them from weeds when I dig them up?
So most of the weeds that you're dealing with now are just annual weeds, or they came up by seed. So that root mass is going to be really small. But the bulbs, just by being bulbs, when you dig up in the ground, they're going to have this, you know, for the hyacinths, it might be as big as a golf ball or bigger. The tulips might be the size of a golf ball or a quarter, maybe bigger. And so you're going to see this big fleshy stem underground, and you'll know that, oh, that's they're definitively different than any of the weed roots that you're going to see. The weed roots are just going to be real fine root hairs that you'll just pull apart, and there'll be nothing to them, where the bulbs will be something substantial.
And Roseanne,
what about onion grass?
I just have one tip for you, Roseanne. Just use mulch. You don't need a weed. Just put a thick mulch on. It's so much easier. I'm all about keeping it simple.
That sounds good to me. Roseanne, we appreciate you calling in this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So our questions are for Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. Let's continue with the phone calls. Linda, you are up next.
Hi. I'm calling from Bowling Green, and I was just wondering what kind of impact those cicadas are going to have, like, on new little trees. Do we need to wrap them, or
slice them
and suck everything out?
I told Scott, don't worry about it. Don't do anything about it. And then I Googled it. Maybe I'm wrong. And I Googled it up, and I found it was a pest control company. I'm not going to say their names, but their name begins with a T and ends with an X. But anyway, they had this list of things to do for your trees. The first one was put aluminum foil around the trunk of your tree. This is all ridiculous.
Like all the way up? Or
yeah,
how far up?
I don't know. It's just crazy. Just there's more. And then the other one was put a net over your tree. I'm like, really? Okay. And then the third one was take a water hose to your tree and knock them off the tree. And I'm like, okay, well, that's just even crazier. How many trees you got in your yard? How many are you going to do that? And then my last one is the funniest ridiculousness of it all is pick them by hand and get your family involved. The kids will love it.
Oh, that's not happening.
And, you know, put chocolate on them.
And then put chocolate on them and serve them for dessert with a little vanilla ice cream and life would be good.
So I guess you're being facetious here, Steve, and saying you should do nothing.
Do nothing. Just enjoy them. You know, like we said earlier, they've been in the ground for 13, 17, 19 years, whatever, and they make it to the top, and they've got like a month of life. They came out of their nymph exoskeleton. Then they climb a tree. Then they start singing the sexy song, and then they mate, and then the female goes up and lays some eggs with her metal-like stabber that she's got, it goes into the twigs. and then they die. And let's just give them a break.
And they don't have any impact on the trees, right?
Actually, they do. Oh. What we're doing is aeration, right? They're digging all those tunnels. They provide food for lots of animals like birds, you know, whatever. Moles are going to be, you know, a big problem next year. Chuck and I were talking about that.
And nothing negative on the tree itself?
No. Well, you'll have, you know, when they put those eggs in those, you know, pencil-sized twigs at the top of the tree, you know, it may, what we call them is flagging. They'll flag. It's just like pruning a tree. I mean, that twig will fall off, and it you will not see a big impact on it, on your tree. Not at all.
Okay. And like, I'm talking like we've got like 2-year-old fruit trees.
Yeah.
So
they're still tiny.
Yeah. So one thing to think about is that female, her ovipositor, she actually will pierce the underside of the twig, and she'll do that 6 or 8 times, laying an egg in each time she does that. And so what happens is after the tree's, you know, that branch has been injured, because it's going to be size of a pencil, in a heavy wind, that branch breaks off, and that's exactly what the locust wants. They want that branch to break off. It falls on the ground. When those eggs hatch out, then they can go right into the ground. They're right there. Otherwise, they got to fall out of the tree, right? To get to that egg's got to fall out of, once it hatches, got to fall out of the tree. So those branches will fall. And so if you're growing fruit trees, the thing that you want to do is to go back as you see that and maybe do with a little bit of hand pruners, do some nice clean pruning, sanitary cuts back to a lateral branch. But like Steve said, there's going to be probably minimal damage. And if you see it, that would be the way to address it.
And don't address it with pesticides either, because there's no label.
Oh, no.
There's no label that has cicadas on their pesticide label. So if you did spray that, that would be illegal.
Okay, right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. Appreciate the call. The most ridiculous solution there that you mentioned, Steve, was the aluminum foil. I mean, that is a lot of aluminum foil. I'm thinking of a wide tree trunk, wrapping it up all the way. That would be absurd.
Waiting for the guy to call in with, I have 12 acres of forest. And how many thousand yards of aluminum foil do you think I'll need?
There won't be any more aluminum foil at the store after that. All right, we have Mary. You are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, Mary. Where are you calling from?
From Muskuta, Illinois.
What's your favorite garden center?
Oh, I don't really have a favorite.
Oh, okay. All right. What's your question?
We've had this asparagus bed for years, and the last several years it's been so covered with weeds that it's hard to find the asparagus. So unbeknownst to me, before the asparagus came up this year, my son sprayed the bed with Roundup, and knowing that Roundup causes cancer, I'm kind of afraid to use my asparagus now.
So the Roundup would have been active on the plant, the weeds that were there? And so once the active ingredient in Roundup, which is glyphosate, hits the soil, it becomes inert. So the asparagus, which would have been below grade and would have come up through that soil, I don't know that there's any documented cases of any type of cancer being caused from asparagus being coming up through any kind of agricultural application. Now, having said that, I'm not a great health scientist. I can't give that to you definitively, but I can tell you glyphosate is used in agriculture today as much as it was 30, 40 years ago. Yep. So,
and when you're talking about hazards of pesticides, you have to take into consideration the big thing is your exposure and the quantity. So the quantity is minimal. I would say close to zero. And then the quantity that you eat, you know, how much you have to eat to have that minimal amount pile up in your body is probably not feasible. You can't eat that much asparagus.
All right, you're safe. Thank you for your call.
I have another question, please. Do these fertilizer spikes, do they help to use them for my blue spruce?
So anytime you can add and help the fertility of the soil would be helpful. Those spikes are time release. If you put them out around the drip line of that spruce tree where the active growing roots are, And just a reminder, that blue spruce is that blue color comes from the stomates. And I would make sure that you don't have anybody spray that tree for any reason, because you'll take away that really cool blue color, especially if you try to treat it like with a dormant oil or something. You'll turn them green, and that poor blue spruce will never be blue again.
All right, Mary, thanks so much for your questions. Good ones this morning on the Garden Hotline. For Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett, we will continue with your phone calls in a moment on KMOX.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We can definitely dig it on the Garden Hotline. And these guys, Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett, in particular, can dig it. Thank you for being here, and we appreciate you answering questions from the listeners. We are going to continue that. The phone number is 314-436-7900. Ann, you are up next on the Garden Hotline. Hello?
Hello, who are we talking to today?
Oh,
he's a little delay there.
Yeah,
we'll go to the next caller.
Yeah, we'll have to go to the next call. That would be Pat. Pat, good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Pat, good. Pat, where are you calling from?
I live in University City.
Sweet. What's your favorite garden center?
Garden Heights Nursery on Big Ben.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tammy Bean?
And Menards.
Menards? That's a hardware store.
Yeah, I like their heart. My question is, I have a lilac bush, and I know it's older than 10 years old, but it's looking pretty ragged. The flowers don't stay on very long. And I wanted to know if I could prune it after these flowers that are on there fall off. Is that a good time to prune?
How old is it?
Oh, I know it's got to be at least 10 years.
10 years.
So it may be on the way out.
Yeah.
Well, is it a white flower, purple flowers? And is
purple.
It,
they're purple.
And it's, what, 8 or 10 feet tall?
Oh, wow. No, not that tall at all. About 4 feet.
Oh, about 4 feet. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you look down at the plant, do you have one of the things that you can do to kind of rejuvenate that plant once it gets done flowering is to look at the stems that are coming out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a lot of young stems that are smaller, like the size of your finger or smaller, and then you probably have a bunch of older gray stems that are the size of your thumb or bigger. So if you reduce that plant, you take those gray stems and reduce them by a third, then that plant's going to put more energy into new growth, and then that new growth will move on into setting more flowers for next year. So it would be a way for you to rejuvenate that plant, give it a whirl, and see if it comes back and pushes out from there. And then I would recommend either top dressing it with compost or getting some nice mulch around it to keep it nice and moist this summer. So as those new shoots begin to generate and come on, you're protecting it and giving it plenty of opportunity to hold the moisture and keep it growing.
And some of the tools you're going to need a lopper to cut that larger gray stems, and you're going to need a hand pruner.
Okay.
So go to Menards and get those, or Garden Center may have them.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. Have a good day, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Pat. We appreciate it. Let's continue with the phone calls. Let's try Ann. Let's go to Rob. Rob, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick question. I've got a large, I'm not sure if it's a blue spruce, on the side of my house, and it's almost encroaching on the sidewalk. It's just getting bigger and bigger. Can I take that back about maybe 8 inches a foot or all the way around?
So, the old adage of a right plant in the right place, it seems like when we build a new home, we put lots of plants in the wrong places because 10 years later, they're sitting on top of us. But in this particular case, if you look at that spruce, each year it has a real regimented growth. So you've got side shoots, that are covered with needles, and you go back 4 or 6 inches, and then there'll be another set of side shoots. And so that's each year's growth. So if you wanted to go back with your hand pruners, I would not do a chainsaw. I wouldn't use a hedge trimmer. I'd do it by hand. You can go back and reduce the width of that tree and just go back to that next year's growth or 2 years back, depending on how far you need to take it off. And I would do maybe, again, no more than a third of that this year, and then a third next year, and a third the following year. And that will reduce that plant and keep you from running into it. If it's tall enough, you could always limit up, but then it looks really, really weird and ugly if you did that. So I would try reducing it by a third, but just taking it back to the next set of lateral growth, you know, those lateral branches, and that you should be successful.
Yeah, this thing's about, if I had to guess, it's probably 20 feet tall.
Yeah, yeah. So the hard part
there's
is...
There's no way I'd get to the top of it.
Right, and so the hard part is that tree begins to push and continue to grow now. It's really, you know, it's beginning to strut its stuff, so to speak. And so where you're walking on the sidewalk, you're going to get hit in the head more and more all the time. So at some point, you're probably going to want to limit up to the point where you could plant beneath it, you know, some nice perennials, soft perennials beneath it. But I would keep it going as long as you can. I'd wait till it hits 30 feet before you try to limit up, because it'll just look really funky.
Well, that's what I thought. I had a hedge trimmer. I was going to try and go around and use the hedge trimmer, but doing it by hand, I'd be there like a week.
Yeah, yeah. And all the reason not to use the hedge trimmer. Yeah, I would. They just don't respond very well to that type of pruning.
You'll get it all sappy.
Yeah, it'll be a disaster.
Yeah, you'll ruin your hedge trimmer. That's pretty clear. All right.
Okay. Rob. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate your call. Let's give Ann another try here. Ann.
Yes, sir. This is Ann in Creve Coeur.
Yeah.
I have a gigantic amount of ivy growing, and there are certain areas where I can't, they're bare, okay? Yeah. Every year I buy a flat of ivy and try to replant it in those bare areas. Every year it dies. Now, this is, the part that's well-established is doing great, but the part that isn't, I can't do anything. My question is there any kind of ivy, and this is going to be in direct sun, so is there any kind of brand of ivy that survives well in sun?
Well, let me just add this, before we answer that, I just want to, you know, is it climbing on your house?
No, these are beds in the lawn.
In the lawn, okay. Anyway, the ivies, you have any ant problems or anything?
No.
Okay. A lot of times you'll have ant problems with ivies and ground cover.
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
I really, what's established comes back every year.
Yeah.
And there's just a certain couple of areas where I can't get it to grow. Of course, I'm planting it.
Well, your plants are telling you something there then, right?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't plant the same thing there. You know, the ivy, they like shaded areas, partial sun.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But yeah. I think the well-established stuff does okay in the sun just because it's so well-established. Okay, your next question. In one other area of the ivy, I have periwinkle coming up. So my thought was maybe plant periwinkle in that, in those bare areas, and let that spread through the ivy. Is that going to harm?
I'm going to let Chuck handle this. Chuck, you've done a lot of work with your landscapers and helping homeowners.
Sure.
Situations like this.
Yeah, sure. So part of the challenge is what you're being told from the plant is there's just too much sun. Right. So at that point, and you've tried the best, right? You've watered, you know, every year. And so now it's kind of time to stop betting on instant replay. Right. And so now's the time.
Right.
So now's the time to think of other things. Periwinkle is going to want more shade than what the ivy does. So what I would recommend is, you know, why don't you consider some small shrubs, something that is going to flower, it's going to look nice, that will add to the landscape, that isn't going to, you know, be a big problem for you from a maintenance standpoint. I would recommend like Korean spice bush viburnum. It has a nice early spring flower. It's very fragrant. If you're getting lots of sun, especially morning sun, you could certainly do like a dwarf Korean lilac. You could go native
These are just small areas. I mean, probably maybe 18 inches by 18 inches.
Yeah, I would quit betting on instant replay, and I'd be dropping a shrub in there, and enjoying that for what it can give you.
18 by inches, I'd put mulch on it.
Steve would put mulch on everything.
He even puts mulch on his cicadas in the morning.
Or better yet, you can go to St. Louis Composting and get some compost from them, and it would work out well as a compost.
So a bush would be far too big to put there. Any bush. Is viburnum, does viburnum spread?
No, I mean, the shrub itself, there's a new double file out, and I think it's called wasabi, which is a dwarf double file, and it only gets about 24 inches by 24 inches.
Okay, here's basically what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that will survive in the sun that I can put there that can spread into the ivy if it wants to, just to have green.
Yeah, just to have green. Boy, you know.
No, I got nothing.
I mean, there's only 1,001 plants in the world.
We're talking about 18 by inches here. So
yeah.
Yeah,
maybe you ought to fertilize the ivy and let it come in. Hey, we need to run, so yeah. Thanks for calling this morning. We look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate the call. Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett have both been on the show individually, but today they're on together.
Yeah.
And they've known each other for decades, so... this is a fun experience here.
Actually, this is our second time together. We did this. Remember back in the old place on Market Street?
Oh, okay.
We did it way before your time.
Yeah, so, it was before my time here.
Yeah, Scott, my wife reminded me, hey, you guys can't just talk for 2 hours. You got to take phone calls.
And we're going to take those calls after a short break. 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Our experts this morning are Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. Plants, pests, trees, gardens, anything you want to ask. Bill, you are the next caller on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I have an established asparagus bed. But this year, the stalks have come out bigger than my thumb, most of them. And I don't know... if that's usual or not. Most of the time we have a few of those, but this year we've had a majority of those that are thumb sized. So I was just kind of wondering.
Well, I mean, are you calling to brag? I mean, we put asparagus in our house last year, and I noticed ours are up like less than pencil thin. They're really, really small. I don't have any expectations to harvest them yet because we just put them in the ground. But I think if they're that big, usually that first flush, a lot of times those asparagus, those stalks can get pretty big in diameter. So I would be snipping them and eating them, put them on the grill with a little olive oil and salt and pepper, and away you go.
Now we're talking.
Hey, Chuck, do those wider asparagus, do they get woody or?
Well, they all can get woody if you let them go too long. So you're going to pick them if they're, 8 to 16 inches in length? And if, one thing for folks to think about, what we did in our yard was when we bought the asparagus and they look like, the end of a mop when you put them in the ground. But we put a couple of them at 6 inches deep, a couple of them at 4 inches deep, and a couple of them at 2 inches deep. And so because that soil temperature takes longer to warm up, then it takes longer for those corms, those crowns to respond. And so you extend your harvest period, so you extend your eating period of fresh asparagus.
Bill, we appreciate your call this morning. And just one thought I had was that, if people wasted all that aluminum foil on the trees to protect from the cicadas, you wouldn't have aluminum foil to wrap up the asparagus on your grill.
That's exactly right.
All right, the next caller is Craig. Good morning, Craig. You're on KMOX.
Hey, Chuck and Steve. I have a backyard that is about a 30-degree incline with about 65 to 70 sassafras trees, 4 foot to 45 foot. I'm wondering, what is the way to successfully transplant, move these trees, or some of those? Is that able to do that? And also, why are the colors so much duller the last 3 years? They used to be very bright, and I can't get that again.
So that fall color is all dependent about the amount of moisture that we have going into the fall. So the longer the fall, the more that plant takes longer to shut down. Those colors come from everything other than chlorophyll that's in the leaf. So a long, wet fall is an ideal fall for color. As far as transplanting, I would look at the smallest ones in the group. Sassafras tend to form a grove, and so they sucker underground. And that's why you've got them from 40 feet tall to 4 feet tall. So that would be the way that I would go about it. So thanks for calling in this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Craig. We appreciate it. We will continue your phone calls at the top of the hour, just after the news. So if you've called in already, please hang on. The number, if you haven't and you have a question, is 314-436-7900. And our experts this morning are Chuck Caverly, a botanist, certified arborist, and GrowNative certified professional for 35 years. Steve Millett, a plant and pest doctor. And they've known each other for a long time. They know a lot about the gardening world. And we're going to continue. We're going to talk about hydrangeas next hour. That's what I wanted. And we'll probably get in some more cicadas.
Want to do the recipe?
Yeah, the chocolate cicada recipe. That's all ahead on the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Here comes the sun. Man, I love that song.
Me too.
This is the Garden Hotline. I'm Scott Jagow, your host. The two experts we have, yep, we have two today, Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. They have been friends for a long time. They know each other well, and they are answering your questions about plants and pests and trees and everything gardening this morning. We are going to continue with the phone calls now, 314-436-7900. Holly has been patient. She is up next.
Hi, I have about 16 holly bushes around my property, and I've been putting pine bark mulch on them for the last 10 years, and I'm trying to cut some costs here, and I noticed the lady across the street from me has a pine tree and it drops needles all the time. I'm wondering if I could substitute the mulch and go with the pine needles.
Absolutely. So those hollies tend to like an acid soil. Those pine needles will help keep the create an acid soil if it's not acid already, and will help continue that. Plus the fact that those pine needles are going to break down faster, become food to the microorganisms in the soil, which will in turn will release nutrients to your plants. So make those hollies happier. So I would definitely, if you can work out a deal, might have to train some zucchini bread or something for those pine for those pine needles. But I would go after them, certainly.
So where are you calling from again?
Chesterfield.
Chesterfield. What's your favorite garden center?
I don't know. I don't have a favorite one. I just go where I think the buy is best or the information is better.
Okay. I would also, along with what Chuck's saying, I would add Holly Tone on there. It's a Espoma. It's an organic product. And also,
I've been using that for years, but I went to get some the other day, and it's $24 for a small bag.
It goes a long way. And then you can also get Miracle-Gro's, the acidifying hose end thing. That's real simple. And then
that
beats you going across the street and having to, put the pine needles in a bag.
She'd be more than happy for me to come over and get her pine needles. Well, asked her about if I could have her pine needles. She wanted to know what I wanted to do with them. And yeah. I told her, I just want to save some money here, and those bags are getting too heavy. So, okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very appropriate. Holly, calling about holly bushes. Holly Tone, very good.
Yeah.
Holly's wild here.
Symmetry on the Garden Hotline. I forgot to mention our 800 number. You have to dial 1, though. 1-800-925-1120, as in 1120 a.m. Steve and Chuck are taking your questions, and the next caller is Nancy. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, I have a question about cats. Our neighbors have two cats, and they let them out to run the neighborhood. And I just had some really nice landscaping put in a couple years ago with mulch and
they use it as a kitty litter box, do they?
Yes. They are messing it up, my mulch, and using it as a bathroom. And how can I stop them?
Get a dog.
Well, it's in the front. It's my front yard.
Well, you're going to have to talk to your neighbors. There's nothing really you can do. I don't think, cats are going to particularly...
Is there something I can, spray that would keep from going up there without killing my beautiful plants?
Do you want to spray the cats or do you want to spray the plants?
Get your garden hose out and squirt them when you see them.
I'm not going to answer that. No, I mean, is there something that I could buy from a garden store that would hate the scent?
I don't know. There's that repels all. Maybe try that. It smells like rotten eggs.
Yeah, or coyote urine. Either way, so it's never a good choice. I mean, the big thing to do would be to talk to your cats, because they're probably, if they're letting them run, I would talk to your neighbor's cats. And if they're letting the neighbors,
you mean talk to the neighbors about their cats?
Well, they can talk to the neighbors about the cats, but I like to talk to the cats personally, because if they come on my yard, then they meet my dogs. And so you might get a dog in the front yard and a dog in the backyard, and that way you can protect your beds altogether.
So we have no solution for you except talk to your neighbor.
Okay. Yeah, I have seen the cat doing it, and I've run out there and ran after it, and then it runs back into their yard and up their porch.
Yeah,
it just keeps coming back. It looks at me.
There is some scientific evidence that cats are actually aliens, because they don't really care what you think about them. Yeah. So it's hard to tell.
Okay. Well, right. I thought I'd try and see if there was something I could spray on there.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks for your call. Steve, now, how do you like mulch now? Cats are peeing all over it.
Yeah, I had a garden and the cat did that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's continue the phone calls for Chuck and Steve. Bruce, you are next on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I listened a couple of weeks ago and heard about a grass seed somebody recommended. I've got a fairly shady area. Don't want to do a lot of maintenance on it. And I think I heard it again last weekend, but I never got it written down.
Yeah, so it's called Scottish Lynx is the mix. It is a mix of about four different really fine-bladed creeping red, hard chewings fescue, sheep's fescue. There's not a lot of it can be hard to find if you can find it. There is another seed that's out there that does well in shade. It's put out by George's Magic Mix for Shade. It's carried by G.R. Robinson Seed. That's available at all your favorite local garden centers. We'll carry those seed mixes. But if you look at their shade mix, it has a little bit of perennial rye in it, but it has all those fescues in it too. So it's probably going to be easier for you to find locally at your favorite neighborhood garden center as opposed to this Jacqueline seed mix, which is Scottish Lynx.
I would also suggest when you can go to a hardware store and get the Scott's Shady Mix as well. It's pretty good product out of Dublin, Ohio. They do a lot of research, and they got some really high quality seeds as well too.
Yeah, it's an area that's been reclaimed from honeysuckle.
Oh, honeysuckle! You better be on top of that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I've done a half acre, and it's taken me almost 4 years.
Well, there's a place in heaven for you for cleaning out that half acre of honeysuckle. That is just nasty stuff.
You still have to maintain it though. Keep an eye on it. It'll come back.
Oh, you got to keep cutting it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate the phone call. The number is 314-436-7900. We did have a text question about hydrangeas, Chuck.
So if you remember, I think 2 weeks ago we had a gal call in and said, you know, hey, my hydrangeas are coming up green from the base, but they've got all these dead sticks. And so I thought about that conversation and realized there's two major types of hydrangeas that we find in our landscapes that are available for us to use. One is the MOP or the macrophylla group, which is the real fancy ones that are pink and blue, and you can change the colors depending on the acidity or the base of the soil. And there are some fantastic cultivars out of that group of hostas. But the other group of hostas are paniculate hostas, which are woody, and they tend to not die back to the ground. So if you have a Limelight or a Tardiva or any of the paniculate varieties of hydrangea, they'll be woody, and all you're going to do is wait for them to push out it and then prune back to the nearest bud. So it just dawned on me that if somebody had a Limelight hydrangea and they were going to go back and cut it to the ground, it'd be like, oh my gosh, you've destroyed your shrub. So I wanted to clarify. So thanks for asking that, Scott.
Yep. They say two heads are better than one. We have two heads here.
Like the two-headed snake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the two-headed snake.
Orchid lily or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're actually sharing one brain, so thanks for calling this morning, everybody.
I have to go to the zoo to get a surgery to take us apart.
Steve Millett and Chuck Caverly are our experts this morning on the Garden Hotline. We are going to continue with your phone calls in just a moment. Stay tuned. You are tuned in to the Garden Hotline on a lovely Saturday morning where the temperature is going to be 84 degrees this afternoon. I'm Scott Jagow, glad to be joined by Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. They've both been on the show previously. Now they're on the show together today answering your questions, and we have a full bank of phones. We're going to start with the phone calls. Lenny, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning, guys. I'm going to say dirty words on the radio.
Be
wild
careful.
Violets. No, wild violets. Mm-hmm. How do you take care of them? I know you could paintbrush them, but these are like growing in my liriope. They're in my hostas. They're in my black-eyed Susans. It's mm-hmm. just infested. How do you take care of them?
Well, first of all, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Belleville.
Belleville, what's your favorite garden center?
Either Dillman's or Effinger's.
Effinger's, okay. Yeah. Rick and Trudy, you got to go there. That's a great place. Yeah, wild violets, they are invasive sometimes, and they can be a problem in your plantings and everything. If it was in your yard, that would be easy to do with the fall application of a herbicide.
Right.
You want to get it when all the nutrients are going down into the corm, and that's just a fall thing to get rid of them. And you can also do a post-emergent in the spring as well on the lawn one, but you can't really do that in between your plants that you want to have for ornamentals. So you're going to have to just suck it up and get your trowel and dig it out and get your hands dirty. You know? Yeah, can you dig it?
That's my answer. It's right inside. I mean, it's growing amongst it. You know.
Yeah, that's right. That's it.
So I'm tearing up my plants as I'm digging. You know.
Yeah. Well, I either live with it or dig.
Okay. Do they come back from? How do they propagate?
They have a fleshy corm underground, which is a fleshy root structure. It's maybe the size of a pencil. So if you were to take, say, a clump of liriope and dig it out, it'd be really easy to identify those violet roots. They're not very deep. They're maybe an inch and a half in the ground at the most. And, you know, the idea that you treat them in the fall time is that plant is putting all of its energy back into the corm. If you were to go out and spot treat them now, if you were real good and either painted it on, another way to think about that is what we call it, work the glove of death. If you get a latex glove on, and then get like a car wash mitt, and you soak that car wash mitt in your herbicide mixture, you can go out and grab the leaves independently, and then you're coating just the leaves that you're after. But again, we're talking about you're going to be down on your hands and knees to be that direct with the control that you're after.
Yeah, is it worth it?
Yeah, because I've been fighting them for, you know, years, and it just seems like if you miss, that's why I was asking how they propagate, because it seems like if you miss just one,
yeah,
they're all back next year, you know. Yeah.
If you were a big native pollinator fan, you would say, oof, those violets are just perfect for the early spring flow of pollen and nectar for those early bee species. But for most of us, we don't do that, and we would much rather have them go away than stay.
So if you've been working on it for several years, I'd just change your mindset and just live with it.
Yeah, you sound like my mom. That's what she says. So.
Steve, the psychologist. Over here.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Well, he is a plant and pest doctor, so I guess it's okay to provide that sort of advice. The phone number is 314-436-7900. Kaylee, you are the next caller. Good morning.
Hi. I'm Kaylee from Chicago.
Oh.
And I have a lemon bone plant.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering how you would take care of it.
You're in Chicago. Where part of Chicago are you in?
Downtown. In the Loop.
In the Loop. Oh, cool. So you live in a sky rise or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's cool. You got them growing inside then, I take it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you got to grow them in what, a pot, or what do you got going?
Yeah, in like a plastic pot, and it has a reservoir underneath it.
Okay, well, cool. So, yeah, it should be, you know, I don't imagine you have much sun in your place, so you've got some supplemental lighting out that, or?
I actually do. It's a grow light.
Okay, like an LED light?
LED grow light.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, sounds like you're doing the right thing. What I would probably do is make sure you get some fertilizer, but you don't want to fertilize it too much. You could probably get some salts since you're inside, make it real easy. You get like a bag of Miracle-Gro or something like that, and just put it in your water. How you water it? You water from the top or bottom, or what do you do?
From the bottom.
Bottom. It's like a hydroponic thing, like a wick or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I would put the salts in the reservoir, and then you should be fine. And then if it gets too big, you just clip off, and you can use those lemon balms are great for pollinators and bees. It's like the first thing that bees go to, and lemon balm is actually really cool for calming people. So maybe you want to share your branches with other kids or people. Sorry. All right. Thanks, Kaylee. Okay, thanks great. For calling.
All right. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. The next call is Anne Marie. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you calling from?
University City.
What's your favorite garden center?
Garden Heights.
Garden Heights. Is Tammy Bame the manager there, owner there?
What's the first name?
Tammy.
You know, I don't know.
Okay. Well, next time you go in there, ask for Tammy.
They're all wonderful. They're just all professional and friendly and knowledgeable, so they're all good.
What's your question?
Okay, question. Tropicals, when they come in those black pots, I think they're about 10 inches. I usually take them out and put them in a larger pot for drainage and also for aesthetic reasons, but I think I'm putting them in something that's too large and it's not really retaining the water the way I want it to. So my question is, are they too root bound if I leave them in the original 10 inch black pot that they come in when you buy them?
So it really depends almost on a plant by plant basis. You know, as they become root bound, they're going to produce probably a more robust plant because there's so much energy that they're pulling. You heard Steve talking a little bit ago about watering. Do you water from the top or do you water from the bottom? The idea with watering is you want that soil to come up through the soil. And then any of the salts that precipitate out will precipitate out on the top of the container. And so if you water from the top, every time you water, you're rehydrating those salts and pushing them back down into the soil mix, which can cause a problem over the long term. So
I water from the bottom, and they're on pebbles, so there's, you know, enough drainage and they can slowly go up. I'm talking specifically about Mandevilla. As tropicals.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so that Mandevilla is a really heavy feeder. It likes to run, you know, if you've got a good trellis for it. You know, I don't know if you're putting it out on your patio or a deck.
I have a good trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. So it loves to run. So, right. And it's a super heavy feeder. So, I wouldn't worry so much about the root mass. If you can tuck that pot inside a decorative pot, that would probably take a lot less work for you. You're going to have to work a little harder to make sure it's hydrated, you know, that it's getting water. But I would leave it right in its pot and then let it go. Let it roll.
Well, that's the conclusion I came to. So when we're getting, like, this week in the 80s already, how often do you recommend, other than looking at the soil, how often would you recommend tropicals in our summers here? Daily to water?
If you put them outside?
Oh, yeah, they're outside.
Okay, well, I would just check it, you know, maybe an inch of water a week. Total for plants that are in the ground. And, you know, that is, if you have an inch of rain, you don't need to water. You don't want to water too much. You have shallow roots. And then that will, you know, you won't have a good plant. You want those roots to go down deep, and you want to force them, into...
No, I'm going to keep it in the pot.
In the pot? Okay. Yeah, well, then it'll dry out quicker, so you got to keep an eye on it. It just depends on the temperature. But thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Anne-Marie. We are taking your phone calls for Chuck and Steve on all things gardening, because it is the Garden Hotline, and the hotline number is actually 314-436-7900. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls. This is the Garden Hotline. I'd like to be. Yeah, we're going back to the Beatles.
Yeah.
I was going to say, just garden. Put it up for just a second. There we go. All right, the phone number is 314-436-7900. I'm Scott Jagel. Our experts are Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. They go way back. They've both been on the show before, one time apparently together, but now they're back together on the program, mm-hmm. answering your questions.
A reunion.
A reunion of sorts. Let's see. The next caller is D. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, good morning. I'm glad that you're doing the show. I enjoy listening to the show almost every week.
Dee, where are you calling from?
Actually, I'm calling from Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Lee's Summit, what's your favorite garden center?
Sure, Heartland.
Heartland, okay. What's your question? Yeah.
Okay, I really have a comment for the lady that called in about the cats in her mulch.
Oh, my gosh.
She needs to get some mothballs and crush them up and sprinkle that all over there. They do not like that smell. So okay. That might help it out.
Yeah, okay? I got an issue with that. Mothballs are pesticide. If you look at the pesticide label on the back, it will say that you need to put it into a box of clothes and it's sealed, and then that's how you get rid of the moths. It's a pesticide, actually. So anything that you go off script of the label is illegal. So if you're using mothballs outside, that's an illegal practice. So I would not recommend that.
Okay. Right. But it works. Okay.
All right. It works.
Glad to know. I didn't know that.
I can't recommend anything that's, I'm a professional.
I've got it off and on different years, different places, depending on if there's cats or enough, around. So, okay. Well, thanks for the info.
Yeah. No, thank you.
I won't forget that little tidbit of information. Mothballs and cats. I'll put that back. I'll hold on to that one.
We don't want any dead cats. Or do we?
Yeah. Well, it is carcinogenic. It is. It's naphthalene, and it's like
it's a
aromatic hydrocarbon, and it causes cancer. So, yeah, why would you want to put that outside? Do not put mothballs outside.
The next phone call comes from Joyce. You're on the Garden Hotline. Joyce, hello. You're on the air.
Hi, Joyce. Where are you calling from?
Sorry. I'm here. St. Louis.
St. Louis? What's your favorite garden center? Yeah.
What's my favorite? Handyman. Lowe's and all the rest of them.
Okay.
But I need to ask you about some squirrels if you can. They digging holes all in my front yard, and I keep thinking, put bear stuff up there, but I see them out there all the time, just digging.
Yeah, that's what squirrels do, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
I can't get rid of them?
No.
I keep putting the stuff down for the bear spot.
You can try and trap them, and that's kind of difficult. You need like years of experience and a seasoned
no red
trap.
Pepper, none of that will stop them.
Pardon me.
Red pepper won't stop them.
Red pepper.
It might. Yeah. It might, but you'd be putting down red pepper over your entire yard. You know. remember, there.
I just wanted in the bear. I got about 15 holes.
Yeah. Yes. So they're probably digging, looking for acorns, or they're trying to remember. Yeah, well, cicadas. So they're not that smart yet.
Not squirrels.
Squirrels. they're probably trying to remember where they buried all the acorns from last fall, and that's why they're digging up in your yard. So
okay, this is what I want to ask you right quick. I bought some of that stuff you roll out to get your grass coming up. Is it good? You just roll it out and then water.
It's only as good as much as you want to water. It wouldn't necessarily be my most favorite method of reestablishing my lawn. But if you've got it, I'd give it a whirl, and the biggest limiting factor for you is going to be water. So you're going to want to keep it watered, give it, a shot of water once a day or twice a day for the first 14 days until that seed germinates. And then once it germinates, I go every other day and keep it moist until you cut it.
All right, thanks so much for your call, Joyce.
Don't cut it first?
I would, well, if the grass is long now all around it and you got to be able to get your little mat down in its place, I would certainly cut it first. But after you get that mat established, I'd let it go for a week or two as the seed gets hydrated and takes off.
All right. Thanks, Joyce. We appreciate your call this morning on the Garden Hotline, which is 314-436-7900. On the squirrels, I guess they have kind of not great short-term memories. Can't remember where they put their nuts last fall.
Just remember, if they didn't have furry tails, we'd call them rats. I'm just saying.
But I can understand how frustrating it would be, because I had a mole once, and that was very frustrating. But squirrels and moles are different creatures, Steve.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
But usually people trap moles. Yeah. So what squirrels are just too hard to catch.
You can trap them. And most time they trap them is when they're getting in your house. And, you know, I was a customer the other day, and there was a tuck pointer doing his work on the chimney. And he says, I just saved you a call because I there was no cap on this chimney, and we had to put a new cap on it. And I pulled it up, and there was a squirrel's nest in there. So he said, I saved you a call. So, yeah, that's the only time you really trap is if they're getting into your house. If they're out in the yard, yeah, change your mindset.
Yeah, it's just tough. All right, Joe, you're next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Where are you calling from?
Carlisle.
Carlisle, Illinois. You got a great lake over there. What's your favorite garden center?
Plantland and Breeze.
Excellent. What's your question?
Yeah. It's kind of a two-part question, depending on the answer from the first part. So we moved here about 8 years ago, and one of our trees, the ash tree, was going downhill. And I called in before and talked to Mike, and we started drenching around, putting a drench around it for the emerald ash borers, trying to save it. And it appears like it helped for a little while. It looked like, but
yeah, I would don't bother. Just take it down. I got a route in Kirkwood to Pear, and in that neighborhood they've tagged trees to be cut, and even though the tree is healthy, they're just like, you know, why even bother. It's going to come, and it's going to devastate your tree. So just don't bother with the drench. It's not going to work.
The limbs are splitting, yeah, and bark's coming off. Is that pretty much the borers then?
You'll see like a half moon borer hole. That's the key indicator. Just Google online, right.
I've been looking at those. Yeah, we've got the hole.
Yeah, if you're seeing split bark and dead branches, I would take it down. And so here's the thing, you know. Had you started 8 years ago instead of drenching it, taken it down and put in a new tree like an oak or a hickory or a crabapple or insert name a tree here in its place, 8 years later, that tree would be doing for you what you were hoping that ash was going to continue to do. So, like Steve said, get that thing down, get it out of the way, get the stump ground, and then go to your favorite garden center and get that nice tree and get it started.
Okay.
All right.
And that real quick, what would you recommend then? It's right by our driveway and our front road. So like it's a smaller area. What would you recommend for that area for
not a tree.
Nice, you know, smaller tree?
Not a tree.
No. So if you wanted a small ornamental, you could always look at a redbud or a serviceberry. A flowering crabapple would do good. A flowering cherry might be nice. You know, those are all trees that are going to hit 25 feet by 25 feet. Serviceberry and redbuds are native, so they're going to do the most for our native pollinator population. So those would be the ones that I would tend to recommend.
So is that like between the sidewalk and the road?
Yeah, no, it's got a pretty good size area. Well, I didn't want to get something real
what's,
big.
What's and, like, the width? Said, not, what's the width?
I would say we've got 50 feet by.
Oh, okay.
Or 30 feet, something like that.
All right, you got plenty of room.
It's like a corner of the property.
All right, Joe. Thanks for your call.
Thank you guys for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Lisa has been waiting patiently. Lisa, you are up next on the Garden Hotline with Chuck and Steve.
Thank you, Chuck and Steve. I have just a comment again about cats. Sorry to talk about cats so much. But I have a really beautiful landscape and a garden, and there are cats. And my neighbor has cats in her garden, and she asks what is going on because they're ruining hers. She uses fish emulsion
for her fertilizer, and the cats love fish, so they're headed over to her house.
Well, so that fish emulsion is not, I mean, it's stinky fish. It's not only just the fish, it's the fish excrement.
Exactly. So, it's like saying, cats, come over here. This is really nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. If it attracts them, I've never seen any studies on that. But anyway, you're just going to have to deal with the cats, or you're going to have to talk to the neighbor. That's basically the bottom line we've been saying.
Well, I love cats, and I feed squirrels. So
do not put mothballs out, please.
I don't use mothballs in my house either. But I also wanted to ask you, did I miss like an announcement that Mike Miller has gone to the Caribbean, or is he coming back? Because I mean, I love you, but I've listened to him for years, and I just want.
Sure, we appreciate you asking. We don't have an update on Mike. He's been out for a few weeks dealing with some health issues and hasn't been able to come back yet. But we, of course, are hoping he does, and we are sending him our best regards. But yeah, I don't have an update this morning, anything new, just that he's been still dealing with some health issues, and hopefully he's in recovery and will be able to get back. And we appreciate your concern, Lisa. Thank you for calling on the Garden Hotline on KMOX. We will continue with your phone calls in just a moment. Stay with us. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't. Welcome back to the Cat Hotline on KMOX. I'm joking. It's the Garden Hotline, although we've had a lot of questions about cats in gardens. So, we got one in the studio?
Oh, my gosh.
We're not using mothballs.
They just bit my nose.
Chuck and Steve are our guests. Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett. We're taking your phone calls. Let's get to the phone lines. Mike, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Mike, are you there? Hello, Mike. Mike.
I think we lost Mike.
Microphone check.
How about Art? Art, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, right. Art, I know your voice. You called in the last couple times.
I'm praying for Mike.
What?
I had a bicep tendon tear. I know what he's going through.
Okay.
Let me know.
Well, okay.
I'm a William Albright student. I think he's got a lot to offer. I'm wondering what these gentlemen think of permaculture.
Permaculture.
Why was thalidomide outlawed?
Those are two different questions. Wow. I'm going to go with permaculture. Yeah. Permaculture is a great type of how you grow your garden. And it's just focusing on getting a permanent solution to your garden problems where you don't have to put a lot of inputs in. And that's about all I have to say about that. And then what is it?
Thalidomide.
Thalidomide. And that's an insecticide or? I don't know anything about that.
Fertilizer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Why did they get rid of it? That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to do some research on that for you, Art. And we'll get back to you next week, maybe.
We'll have to get back to you next week. All right, Bill, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Thanks, Steve and Chuck.
Yeah, no problem. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from St. Louis.
And your garden center?
I'm calling from O'Fallon, Missouri.
Okay, and your garden center? What's your favorite garden center?
Just the big box stores.
Okay.
Lowe's.
What's your question?
I bought a house about 4 years ago, and it had a weeping willow tree in the backyard, and it's a nice, wonderful tree, great shade. But I've recently just noticed, and it reminded me of the song that you played by the Beatles, the Octopus Garden.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I need to call you guys because, my weeping willow seems to look like the root system looks like a octopus coming out of the ground. So I was wondering what I should do about the root. Should I cut the roots back? Should I get rid of the tree? What would be the best?
So I would say, weeping willows are a bottomland species, right? So they like water, a real high water table. And consequently, when you have tree species like that, silver maples are another one, or bald cypress or birches, they like to keep their roots real high on the surface. So the larger the tree gets and the bigger its root mass gets, the more those roots tend to kind of emerge at the surface level. So two things to think about. One would be to use Steve's favorite thing in the world, is mulch. and so you could mulch or throw some compost over the top of them and quit mowing underneath them. And in that case, you could always add a ground cover or create a little nice perennial garden. Lots of options there. Weeping willow is Salix babylonica, like the weeping gardens of Babylon. So that's where that species name comes from, which is kind of clever. The other thing, that tree is used a lot in Japanese gardens because it, if you look at it from a distance, it looks like spirits and technically evil spirits because you don't see any legs. And I'm not a feng shui guy, so I'm not telling you you got a bunch of big evil spirits in your weeping willow in the backyard. But if it's happy and healthy and growing, I would protect those roots. I would not cut them and quit mowing over the top of them and let that guy be that great, interesting tree that it is. Throw a light on it at night, and then it would really create some cool landscape at night for you.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for the question. We probably have time for one more call, a quick one. Danny, you're on the Garden Hotline with Chuck and Steve.
Oh, good deal. You guys could squeeze me in. Yeah, got a heck of a show going there, Chuck and Steve. Calling from Donelson, Illinois, and my favorite garden center is Fred's Greenhouse in Sorrento,
Sweet.
Illinois.
Great.
What's your question?
I'm being inundated. I believe it's some sort of cold weather weed, perhaps like a henbit.
Henbit? Yeah. Yeah. And you missed your window on that. The time to hit that is in the fall when all the energy's going. Well, that's the pre-emergent in the fall. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I called Mike a few years ago and okay. I was thinking that's what he said. I'm just going to get around to doing it this year.
Yeah. You can, and, right now you can do a post-emergent, but you know what? You put a post-emergent out now, it's just going to kill them. Because they're dying anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking as it warms up there. But yeah, it looks hideous. Between that and the dandelions, it's hideous. And I mean, and then another quick question with week from today being 420, what kind of soil temperature am I looking at for starting my garden?
So typically we look for 56 degrees. I noticed on the St. Louis Science Center website the other day that it's at the Science Center, it's already at 60. So if you've got a yard that's getting lots of sun, my guess is your soil temperature is right in that window and you should be ready to go. That would be great. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you, Danny. Appreciate the call. Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett, it's been a pleasure.
Scott,
been a lot
you're
of fun.
Awesome, man. This is
great
so
to
fun.
See you again.
Yeah, we've had a good time. We've talked about cicadas. We had too many questions about cats. But all in all, a great show. And we send our best to Mike Miller. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Thanks for tuning in to The Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. On The Garden Hotline on KMOX, we will continue with your phone calls in just a moment. Stay with us. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. But we'll get together. Welcome back to the Cat Hotline on KMOX. I'm joking. It's the Garden Hotline, although we've had a lot of questions about cats in gardens. So, wait, we got one in the studio?
Oh, my gosh.
We're not using mothballs. We're not using mothballs.
They just bit my nose.
Chuck and Steve are our guests. Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett, we're taking your phone calls. Let's get to the phone lines. Mike, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Mike, are you there? Hello, Mike. Mike.
I think we lost Mike.
Microphone check.
How about Art? Art, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, all right. Art, I know your voice. You called in the last couple of times.
I'm praying for Mike.
What?
I had a bicep tendon tear. I know what he's going through.
Okay.
Let me know.
Well, okay.
I'm a William Albite student. I think he's got a lot to offer. I'm wondering what the gentleman think of permaculture.
Permaculture.
Why was thimetamide outlawed?
Those are two different questions. Wow. I'm going to go with permaculture. Yeah. Permaculture is a great type of how you grow your garden, and it's just focusing on getting a permanent solution to your garden problems where you don't have to put a lot of inputs in, and that's about all I have to say about that. And then what is it?
Thimetamide.
Thimetamide. And that's an insecticide or... I don't know anything about that.
Fertilizer.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Why did they get rid of it? That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to do some research on that for you, Art, and we'll get back to you next week, maybe.
We'll have to get back to you next week. All right, Bill, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Thanks, Steve and Chuck.
Yeah, no problem. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from St. Louis.
And your garden center?
I'm calling from O'Fallon, Missouri.
Okay, and your garden center? What's your favorite garden center?
Just the big box stores.
Okay.
Lowe's.
What's your question?
I bought a house about 4 years ago, and it had a weeping willow tree in the backyard, and it's a nice, wonderful tree, great shade. But I've recently just noticed, and it reminded me of the song that you played by the Beatles, the Octopus Garden.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I need to call you guys because my weeping willow seems to look like the root system looks like a octopus coming out of the ground. So I was wondering what I should do about the roots. Should I cut the roots back? Should I get rid of the tree? What would be the best?
So I would say, weeping willows are a bottomland species, right? So they like water, a real high water table. And consequently, when you have tree species like that, silver maples are another one, or bald cypress or birches, they like to keep their roots real high on the surface. So the larger the tree gets and the bigger its root mass gets, the more those roots tend to kind of emerge at the surface level. So two things to think about. One would be to use Steve's favorite thing in the world is mulch. and so you could mulch or throw some compost over the top of them and quit mowing underneath them. And in that case, you could always add a ground cover or create a little nice perennial garden. Lots of options there. Weeping willow is Salix babylonica, like the weeping gardens of Babylon. So that's where that species name comes from, which is kind of clever. The other thing, that tree is used a lot in Japanese gardens because if you look at it from a distance, it looks like spirits and technically evil spirits because you don't see any legs. And I'm not a feng shui guy, so I'm not telling you got a bunch of big evil spirits in your weeping willow in the backyard. But if it's happy and healthy and growing, I would protect those roots. I would not cut them. And quit mowing over the top of them and let that guy be that great, interesting tree that it is. Throw a light on it at night, and then it would really create some cool landscape at night for you.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for the question. We probably have time for one more call, a quick one. Danny, you're on the Garden Hotline with Chuck and Steve.
Oh, good deal. You guys could squeeze me in. Got a heck of a show going there, Chuck and Steve. Calling from Donelson, Illinois. And my favorite garden center is Fred's Greenhouse in Sorrento,
Sweet.
Illinois.
Great.
What's your question?
I'm being inundated. I believe it's some sort of cold weather weed, perhaps like a henbit.
Henbit? Yeah. Yeah. And you missed your window on that. The time to hit that is in the fall when all the energy's going. Well, that's pre-emergent in the fall. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I called Mike a few years ago. Okay. I was thinking that's what he said. I'm just going to get around to doing it this year.
Yeah, you can. And right now you can do a post-emergent, but you know what? You put a post-emergent out now, it's just going to kill them because they're dying anyway.
They're right dying now. Anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking as it warms up there. But yeah, it looks hideous. Between that and the dandelions, it's hideous. And I mean, and then another quick question with week from today being 420, what kind of soil temperature am I looking at for starting my garden?
So typically we look for 56 degrees. I noticed on the St. Louis Science Center website the other day that it's at the Science Center, it's already at 60. So if you've got a yard that's getting lots of sun, my guess is your soil temperature is right in that window and you should be ready to go. That would be great. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you, Danny. Appreciate the call. Chuck Caverly and Steve Millett, it's been a pleasure.
Scott,
a lot of
you're
fun.
Awesome, man. This
is
thanks.
Great
so
to
fun.
See you again.
Yeah, we've had a good time. We've talked about cicadas. We had too many questions about cats. But all in all, a great show. And we send our best to Mike Miller. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Thanks for tuning in to The Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time.